This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Royal Oaks. Next time on Too Many Lawyers, we take on a couple of villains to sort out whether bad stuff is also illegal stuff. George Santos won a seat in Congress by lying to voters, but is that a crime? And Kanye West made it clear he hates Jews. In England, he'd go to jail for that. Here in America, did he commit a hate crime? Listen to Too Many Lawyers on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston accent.
Big jab there for Duffy and Frank Mir is hurt now.
Down goes Duffy out cold. Frank Mir does it again.
Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Well, folks, would you look at Kenny Florian today? I mean, why do you look so good today? I don't know if it's your hair. It looks like you were maybe in a sandy beach type situation. The sun is hitting you in a very interesting way. What are we doing, kids? Sorry to make you guys wait. It's Monday, August 8th, 2022, episode 360 of the Anik and Florian podcast. What's going on with your hair, man? I mean, we're not going to bury the lead, man.
I think it's just humidity, kid. My hair just it's all afroing right. A little bit right. And I don't know, I think maybe it suits me, who knows, but I got a big forehead and it's very shiny. I noticed that
it's its own being, to be sure. So look like you caught a few minutes with our executive producer Cody Merrow there while you were at the PFL show in the New York City greater tri-state area, if you will.
Cody touched on this, but it's very weird when you meet someone, you know, actually for the first time, you know, eye to eye, but you've been talking to that person for the, you know, every week for the last couple, you know, 2.5 years. So it was great to finally meet up with our star producer, and he's been killing the game for a little while. It's great to catch up, get a beer and get some food, and good old New York City, kid.
Yeah, somebody will be poaching Cody Merrow, but that's beside the point. So why is it, though, that you haven't met him or he hasn't met Longo? It's not the pandemic necessarily. I mean, we do a radio show from a distance. You and I have been doing the show remotely away from each other well before, you know, this kid born in the 1980s or 90s arrived, right? 93, I believe it was, right?
Yeah.
So why is that? I don't know. I do think, generally speaking, societally we were at a distance even before being socially distanced.
It's true.
But you're off to Europe and you're not gonna be wearing a mask, so that's a good step in the right direction. So you're going to Wales and all over the place. You got seminars. The PFL will be in Wales and in London, so people are pretty excited about your trip. I mean, you know, if social media is any indicator, people are very excited about your trip.
That's funny. I'm excited, man. I'm excited to go over to the UK. Never been over there with the PFL. Obviously, it's been a long time since I've been over there with the UFC. The family's very gracious and excited and energetic. So I think we're going to have a good time. Kayla Harrison's fighting over there. Rory McDonald. A lot of big fights over there. Big names. So I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, Kayla Harrison just dripping with star power. One of my favorites. Yeah. Sorry to anyone who was offended that I question whether or not she could make 145 pounds sustainably. But I digress. All right. Sunday, August 14th, Wales, the Rob Taylor Jiu-Jitsu Academy. That's in Cardiff. I believe standing room only, still available. Tickets still available. Monday, August 15th. I want to pronounce this correctly. Wolverhampton Intensity MMA. I think it's Wolverhampton. So hopefully
you did. You killed it, dude. Of course you did.
Tuesday, August 16th, Birmingham. Immortal MMA in Tamworth. Get out to Tamworth, folks. See your boy Ken Flo. And then Wednesday, August 17th, London Stronger Fitness and Martial Arts. That's the schedule for Ken Flo. Take in the PFL if you're so inclined as well. Just knock it all the fuck out. Woo! We're excited today for a lot of different reasons. We're going to get into PFL 7. We're going to briefly touch on the UFC's middleweight championship that is coming to Madison Square Garden. Kenny is very excited about Israel Adesanya and Alex Pereira on November 12th. And, of course, we'll talk about Jamal Sweet Dreams Hill and Jeff Neal and everybody else. But Ken Flo's got a little bit of a heavy heart today, and so does the entire Brazilian jiu-jitsu community at large. After the murder, or so it appears, of Leandro Lowe, a multi-time world champion, at least to my knowledge, Kenny, one of the all-time great Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioners, great human being. And I know this loss just hit you profoundly, as it did a lot of people that we care about.
You got it correctly, man. Leandro Lowe is an 8-time world champion. He's a guy who started off in a much lighter weight class, ended up winning world championships in various weight classes. One of the true legends of the sport, competing at an elite level for a very, very long time. Was one of the nicest, coolest guys you can meet. You know, I didn't know him that well. But I have friends who are very close with him and just speak so highly and have spoken so highly of him for a very long time. And to hear of his death and the way that it went down, it's just extremely tragic. It's one of those things that, you know, if you had another star in the sport, you know, it'd be like if Kobe Bryant, you know, while he was playing, passed away. It's kind of that level. And of course, you know, the death of Kobe was just awful. But, you know, Leandro Lowe was still an active competitor, had recently won the world championships, had come back from being not able to win for a little while. And having done that was just amazing. So yeah, it really is awful. I feel so badly for his friends, his family. He was a guy that if you were from a rival school, not only did you respect him, but you loved the guy. Like, he was really good friends with so many different high-level competitors from other gyms, which is very rare in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, as you know, which is there's so many rivalries. But even his fiercest rivals just loved and respected the guy. So that kind of gives you an indication of who he was and what he was like. So, you know, he was one of those guys that also influenced the sport with his passing style, with a lot of the techniques that he utilized. So he was one of those guys who transcended the sport. I was very sad to hear that news.
No, I know you were. And my thoughts are with you and a lot of other people who are profoundly affected by this. You know, I mean, my entire feed is just covered in tributes for Leandro Lowe, reading directly from a report here on MMA Junkie. I guess a police officer is a suspect. There was a physical altercation between these two. And I guess Lowe took the guy down and held him there once separated. This man, whose name I'm not going to mention, allegedly pulled a gun and shot him in the forehead and later declared brain dead. Just so sad. 33 years old. You know, man. Oh, well, I think a lot of people are going to be on YouTube looking up Leandro Lowe and everything that he brought to the game, even just in my sort of surface watching over the last several hours. Pretty incredible just to watch him and his style and his intensity and everything else. All right. Today's episode presented to you in part by UFC Fight Pass. See the best UFC Fight Pass has to offer on the Fight Pass 24/7 stream, offering a constant channel of historic fight action all day, all night. Tune in, sit back, and enjoy a network created by fans for fans. Step into our world at UFCFightPass.com. All right, let us get to headlines.
Headlines. It's time for headlines.
I have some very urgent and important breaking news.
Headlines
on the John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
If only you guys could hear Ken Flo's mic check. We just sort of stopped down there to try to reset some things technically. And Ken Flo doing a hell of a mic check. He really gets into it, really getting into the fucking mic check today. I know you're even more into Adesanya Pereira, though, than the mic check. November 12th, Madison Square Garden for the Undisputed UFC Middleweight Championship. It is amazing that this has materialized as quickly as it has. If you don't know the history, there's kickboxing history, extensive history between these two in terms of two head-to-head wins for Alex Pereira. But obviously, there's a lot more to it than that. But your thoughts on that middleweight championship fight and this title defense for your guy, Izzy?
Is this not the fight that I've been calling for? I love the fact that they're putting this fight together. I think it's absolutely massive. I think what's fascinating is both these guys have had careers that are very similar. They've achieved success very early on against very good competition in the UFC. They're now facing each other. They have a history, obviously, that goes back to kickboxing. And we have Israel Adesanya, who's been the champ for a little while now, facing his nemesis, a guy who could potentially have that kryptonite. So not only does he have to contend with the skills of Pereira, but he has to contend with that history that he has. And, you know, he has this thing in his mind where he has to defeat the past in a lot of ways, right? He's got to get that monkey off his back, a guy who has a lot of skills, a lot of power, a lot of danger in his game. And I'm really curious to see if Israel Adesanya can solve that. I think that there's very few people who have the skills who can challenge Adesanya in various ways. There's even fewer that can challenge him in the striking. Pereira is one of those guys. And I can't wait to see it, man. Really, really fascinating fight for a lot of different reasons.
And in many ways, Izzy is the best kind of champion, right? Because he truly wants to fight the guys that you want him to fight.
Right.
And he wants to fight the best guys. And this is obviously an appreciable challenge for him, and one that he's willing to take when the promotion deems it's time for him to take it, you know, and he fights frequently. I mean, just an absolute workhorse. And, you know, he doesn't need to take as much damage as he took in certain fights, like the Gastelum fight, right, to realize great success. And obviously, he's evolved tremendously since that 2019 fight. I keep saying it recently, like that fight between Kelvin Gastelum and Israel Adesanya, maybe the best fight I've ever called. I mean, just absolutely nuts. And Izzy obviously has had a lot of fights that have been much less close since then, but can't wait to see it. And as I said, good on the champion for accepting this challenge, and good on Pereira for being prepared for the Sean Strickland challenge and passing it. All right. Ken Flo is back from PFL 7. How is it being back in the Northeast? A lot of masks up there. A lot of masks up there in the Northeast, I noticed when I was back there.
There is. New York City is totally different, man. A lot of masks, a lot of cigarette smoke everywhere, by the way, too.
Yeah.
But
did
it was
you have
good.
A cigarette?
I did not. I did not partake, but I was inhaling a lot of cigarette smoke. So in a way, I guess I did. But
see, I like the secondhand. I kind of like the secondhand. I'm like, that's all right. I'll take a little whiff of that over here. You know, give me a little buzz.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah, no, it was good to be back, man. Again, there's just always a cool energy in New York City. Ended up doing the show over at the Hulu Theater at MSG, which was always fun. And, you know, it was an electric crowd and we had some good fights.
What other cigarette nicknames can you give me? Lung dart, dirt stick. You know, they all sound better in a Boston accent, you know. Fucking lung dot. Fucking
you like those
stick.
Lung dots?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
One of those dots, the Parliament light with the fucking recessed filter. If I can flick it off, it doesn't get all damaged. Wow. All right.
You're on fire today.
Monday
dude.
Night. Well, we don't, you don't get me at prime time. Totally different thing, right? Totally different thing in prime time. All right. So I want to talk about some of this PFL stuff, much of which I did not see. But yeah. Stevie Ray gets back-to-back wins over Anthony Showtime Pettis. And as I understand it, his next fight will be for $1 million. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right, man. He looked fantastic. Again, just he was fighting with the confidence that you could see from the get-go. He was pressuring Anthony Pettis. Anthony Pettis certainly had his moments as well. But I noticed that, you know, for whatever reason, Anthony Pettis was a little bit slower, you know, was certainly respecting the takedowns and grappling of Stevie Ray, where I think it shut down his striking a little bit too much. And Stevie Ray was able to capitalize on the ground a few times, getting dominant positions repeatedly, and ended up winning a decision against Pettis.
Pettis 1-4 in the PFL. Is that right, huh?
That is right. Oh, my gosh. Yes. Crazy.
Absolutely crazy. Or maybe not crazy, just given all that he has asked of himself over a long and outstanding career, you know, That's a good man right there. But congratulations to Stevie Ray and another good man right there. Another, you know, guy who fought in the UFC, who I got to know a little bit, and I'm very happy to see him realize success. The same can be said for Olivier Aubin-Mercier, and he'll fight Stevie Ray. Is that right? I mean,
yes.
OAM, man, another guy, and call me a simpleton, right? But just seemingly went about a lot of things the right way in the UFC. And, you know, I don't know. I'm just happy that, that he's another guy that might, you know, realize this type of financial success, you know, because he's been at it a long time. He's worked really hard.
John, I agree. I think he's a guy that has made huge improvements since leaving the UFC as well. You could see that he really has tried hard to fill in some of the weaknesses in his game that perhaps he had a few years ago. Really vastly improved when it comes to striking and just putting it all together. And because of that, he's able to defeat you in a lot of different ways. He's able to adjust his style and his approach for different fighters. And I think that's been the difference with him. He has played it very, very smart. He's much more experienced now. And he'll be facing Stevie Ray in a fantastic final.
Omari Akhmedov over Josh Silvetta. I believe first professional loss for Conan Sun, if I'm not mistaken. American Top Team on American Top Team Crime, live from New York. Goes the distance. What were your thoughts on that fight?
Exactly. Even when John doesn't have to do any homework, he just knows.
He did his homework anyway.
No, and you know it, Colt. Josh Silvera, undefeated, was looking fantastic on his route to the semifinal, and ended up losing to Omari Akhmedov, his teammate, a guy that, you know, they were training on the same mat together at the exact same time. Coaches had to be split up in American Top Team. So that was, I'm sure, a very difficult situation. Josh Silvera had helped Omari prepare for several fights, like when he was in the UFC. And, you know, don't forget, Josh Silvera was just a little kid running around ATT, you know, forever. So, you know, just a weird situation there. But Josh has a lot of potential, shows a lot of promise. But to me, it was the more experienced Omari Akhmedov, who was winning rounds and fighting just a bit smarter, was a little bit cleaner with his overall technique and approach. And Omari just decimated his first two guys before going to decision with Silvera. So he's looking fantastic. And he's, you know, at the end of his career. But man, what a way to end it! If he was able to win $1 million, and there's no doubt that he's capable of pulling it off.
And hopefully, Pahumpa's cashing in with some of these guys fighting for $1 million. One of the hardest working coaches on that side, to be sure. And then our guy Rob Wilkinson, right? He will fight for $1 million as well. How many wins in a row for Rob Wilkinson? Do you know off the top of your head since the Israel Adesanya fight? Eight. And
it's crazy.
Since fighting Adesanya. I mean, I know obviously there have been divisional changes and everything else, but another guy you got to feel good for.
And you got to also count, you know, his pro boxing and his kickboxing fights that he had as
Maybe
well.
Maybe I have those in there.
Yeah. So so it's amazing that he has done whatever it takes to get better, has gone and trained with Israel Adesanya, his first opponent in the UFC. He is vastly improved, John. And absolutely massive at 205 pounds. It's crazy that he has been able to cut to 185 pounds at one point, because he looks huge at 205. He's so clean with his technique, and then showed that not only is he clean with his technique and technical, but he's got durability, heart, and a hell of a chin. So he's going to be really tough to beat. You know, right now I have him as a favorite probably heading into this fight against Omari Akhmedov, but I think those guys are going to throw down. He's fighting exciting as well. I don't see that one going the distance, but that one's going to be a tremendous one as well.
All right, lots to be excited about there. 5-0 in MMA since the Adesanya loss for Rob Wilkinson. A couple of kickboxing wins and a pro boxing win as well. At Anik Florian Pod, Lung Dart, Dirt Stick. I mean, Cody, you can't fucking Google and give me another one before we get off the air today. I love you. Absolutely love you. All right, UFC Fight Night. Santos versus Hill. I did not watch it live. I just watched Jeff Neal's handiwork like half an hour before we came on the air. But let us begin with Jamal Sweet Dreams Hill. I'm a big fan of this man as a light heavyweight contender, and I think promotionally he gives you a lot with which to work. Certainly, I'm sure you see things that can be improved cardiovascularly and otherwise, but Jamal Sweet Dreams Hill, man, that fourth round was awesome. Super accurate and put away a guy in Thiago Mejia Santos, who came very prepared and very, you know, willing to sort of go out on his shield.
I agree. I think that this was the Thiago Santos that we haven't seen in quite some time. He has taken a very conservative approach in previous fights. And whether it was Jamal Hill bringing out the best in him and bringing that style and forcing him to fight that fight, or whether it was him, you know, trying to go out there and get a win by finish again, you know, I thought it was a solid performance for him. The problem is Jamal Hill was just too good, right? I mean, he found a way to not only counter, but to move forward and force Santos to fight him. His left hand was just money all night. I think that he did a good job of staying just out of range and still allowed him to land some really good strikes against Santos. He was great with his defensive wrestling and his ability to get back to his feet. So Jamal Hill is looking really, really sharp right now. He's going to be a tough guy to beat. And again, a guy who has shown a lot of promise and fulfilling a lot of that potential that we have all seen.
All right. No more cigarette nicknames in the private chat, because dude just fucking put
butts,
Lucy's, and coffin nails.
That's great.
Coffin nails in there. I didn't hear a word you said about Jamal Hill. So I gotta rewind it or make you say it again. Fucking coffin nails. All right. No more. Because out of focus.
That's good.
Ray Longo's coming up here in a couple minutes, and we haven't even gotten to King Muhammad Usman. But Jamal Hill, Kenny, right? Like sometimes promotionally, right? There's a result that maybe you could see as more favorable, right? Thiago Santos has fought for the title, has headlined myriad times in the UFC. Jamal Hill is oncoming, certainly has a big personality that fills up the room, and he's a plus athlete, to say the least. As you sort of spin Jamal Hill forward, what do you think the ceiling is, and how do you think he matches up with, you know, the Magomed Ankalaevs and the Jiří Procházkas of the world?
I think he matches up pretty well. I think a lot of those matches are fascinating matchups and ones that he could win. I think he's always getting better. He's showing that he has confidence and he's getting more and more comfortable in that octagon. And that's always a good sign. You know, so many times you see guys that are great in the gym, and then when it comes to pulling the trigger in the cage, they're just not able to do that.
Yeah.
Jamal Hill is looking very comfortable. It's looking like the UFC's octagon is his home now. So that bodes very well for him. I think he's going to be a problem for a lot of people. I think he will fight for the belt in the near future. A fight against Ankalaev would be fascinating. And that might happen. Obviously, you have Prohaska and Glover. They're going to be doing it again soon. And, you know, that leaves Ankalaev waiting in the wings as well. So perhaps that's the route they go. That would be a great fight.
I wouldn't mind seeing Jamal Hill and Ankalaev sort of both lay back and see what happens, you know, save your lung darts, if you will, you know,
right,
and not burn your lung darts, you know, right now against each other, because I think they're both two viable light heavyweight title contenders right now, really, I think, based upon their body of work. And again, a lot of these guys haven't been able to put Thiago Santos away, and eventually Jamal Hill was able to do that. So congratulations to a good guy, Jamal Sweet Dreams Hill. All right. How about Jeff Neal? So I saw his head coach, Fortis MMA's Saif Saud, the week before, I guess. And they really felt like they could put Luque away, respectfully, given, you know, Luque's history as a guy who had never been put away like this. But I think to really stand out for Jeff Neal and sort of separate yourself from the ranking or a number and sort of be a name, like Jeff Neal needed to put Vicente Luque away like this. And I thought he did it with style points. What'd you make of Jeff Neal's biggest win to date in the UFC welterweight division?
Yeah, definitely his biggest win and his best performance. And I think that's the most important thing. I think finally, for me, I saw a Jeff Neal that a lot of his teammates and his coaches have talked about. Like, that's the guy that they expect to come out every night. And I think we saw, again, similar to Jamal Hill, a guy who was very confident in his approach, a guy who looked comfortable, and a guy that once he figured out Luque, just never let him in the fight. That left hand was just like a piston. It was beautiful stuff. And as a southpaw looking at another southpaw fight, I think he was doing a lot of great things out there. And Luque just didn't have the answer. Luque was not adjusting. Luque's so tough, and he's so used to taking damage and coming back. And Jeff Neal just consistently hammered him again and again and again with that left hand. And just always had an answer. Never really let Luque get multiple shots in a row, right? He was never really letting him get combinations off. One shot here and there, but Jeff Neal was moving very well. He was confident. He was defensively sound. And more importantly for me, letting his hands go. That's been the biggest thing for me with Jeff Neal, is letting those hands go and bringing the type of offense you expect from a guy who's that fast, that athletic, and that powerful. So, not only was it his biggest win, but it was his best performance as well. So awesome, awesome job from Jeff Neal. I had doubted perhaps his motivation or his approach. You know, like when is the Jeff Neal that we expect going to show up? He showed up, and I'd get behind him for the next fight for sure.
Gilbert Burns is in a little bit of a tricky position, or so it appears, you know, and I could probably learn more if I would get my fat ass back to the Institute of Human Performance and see Rio Santana. But he can sort of command like a really big fight, the Jorge Gamebred Masvidal fight, right? But knowing Gilbert the way I know him, right, staying active in a lot of respects is the best way to resonate and earn that second title fight against Kamaru Usman, you know, and I think he wants a fight, and, you know, maybe he can spin Jeff Neal around quickly because that's the fight that Jeff Neal wants. You know, if Jeff Neal, presumably now number 5 or 6 in the world, would make some concession for Gilbert, maybe it happens on Gilbert Burns's timeline, you know, but there are a lot of possibilities of welterweight for Jeff Neal after putting Vicente Luque away over the weekend. And say what you want, you know, about our guy, Bilal Muhammad, whose ceiling, I think, is championship. You know, he didn't put Luque away over 5 rounds, and Jeff Neal did. And Neal also has a head-to-head win over Bilal. So a lot of interesting things happening and marinating at 170 pounds. All right, it is time for the star of the show, I guess. Is that what we're calling him, the star of the show? Let's get to the Ray Longo Minute.
Now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in his fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute.
Starring Ray Longo.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
There we go.
Yeah.
Oh, now you see why he's the star of the show.
You look very perturbed. I was trying to talk to my friend, Kenny Florian. You weren't jealous, were you?
Well, hey, I mean, I certainly didn't lose your number when I went to the Great Long Island.
Oh, man.
You know, I had tickets, too. Greg Savage had, you know, got me. I had to go out to eat. I had too many things to do.
Look at this guy.
I should have came down. Looked like a good card, though.
Yeah, that was some good fights, man.
So, breaking news, Ken Flo does not text Ray Longo when he goes to New York. And Ray Longo, he didn't even attend UFC, you know, in his backyard. Yeah. So it's hard to think that he's going to make his way to the Hulu Theater for the Professional Fighters League, you know.
Exactly.
So what's been going on, kid? I mean, we've been looking for other nicknames for cigarettes. You know, we got Lung Dart. We got Dirt Stick. And then somebody said coffin nails, you know. Can you pass me one of those fucking coffin nails?
Coffin nails.
I know. That's pretty brutal, right?
That's bad.
I know you're not a cigarette guy.
Yeah, who came up with coffin nails?
The internet, I believe. I mean, Cody Mero. At Cody Mero on social media if you're a single woman in the New Jersey area.
I'll stick with the Brits. They're just...
That's right. That's what they call them there.
Pass me
Yeah. So did you see Mohamed Usman win the Ultimate Fighter with that, as Michael Bisping called it, cheeky left hook? A brilliant commentary.
Was it a hook? It was like a stiff arm, maybe, no?
Amazing. Ken Flo. No, I mean, that short little weapon, right? I mean,
yeah,
that must
he's got to
nice,
have
huh?
some... some power, because that thing didn't even turn that hook over. I mean, I don't know what I was looking at.
Yeah. That's the thing. I had to go back and look at it. I was like, did this thing even land? It was like an all an arm punch. But then when you heard the sound, you're like, my goodness, it sounded like a shotgun. But I was really happy for Mo. You know, he's a guy that, you know, lost his kid. You know, you heard that story, just a heartbreaking story, man. Was fighting over in the PFL. You know, had struggled over there a little bit, and to see him put it all together and get that win. He's one of the good guys in the sport, and landed a beautiful shot there. And even the fight really wasn't going his way, and he battled back.
Without a doubt,
adversity there. That was awesome.
It was almost like the other guy was just so he knew the guy had power, and the second anything tapped him, he was out.
Yeah,
that's the way it looked like to me. Just I'm out of here because it didn't. But you're right though. The sound definitely was.
Yeah.
The audio was crazy because it didn't look like he did anything. But when you're strong, you're strong.
Man, yeah,
no doubt about it. I'm excited to see what he can do. I think a lot of his heavyweight contemporaries are excited to see what he can do as well. Nice injection into the heavyweight division. Hey, what'd you think of Jamal Sweet Dreams Hill, Ray? Did you see the main event?
Phenomenal. I like him, man. Great
boxing. I did too, man.
Great range. He, didn't look like, look, he took a vicious striker like Thiago Santos and turned him into a wrestler. So he's got something going on. And I think that was the problem in the fight. Once you can't really get the takedown, or if you do get a takedown, the guy gets back up. That's not a guy you want to be standing in front of with your arms feeling a little tired. But you could see there was a big difference in the technicality. I mean, Thiago, for a guy that's been around for a while, was just swinging from his ass for the fences. And this other guy was, a little more patient and calculated. And I like what I'm seeing. He's definitely will be fighting for a title for sure.
Yeah. So I've had my head in the sand a little bit as far as the mixed martial arts world is concerned. It was a busy month of July, a couple pay-per-views, ABC show. So I know there was a lot that happened in your world, particularly in Vegas, Dana White's Contender Series last Tuesday. So if you'd be so kind as to fill the Minutemen and everybody else in as to how it went down.
Yeah, I mean, Charlie Campbell came out guns blazing, which we knew he would. You know, he's a savage, he does go for it. That's what Dana wanted. I almost think Dana riled him up too much in the back because I heard he gave everybody a speech and looked like he just forgot about any sign of defense when he had him hurt, which is kind of a rookie mistake, I guess, But he definitely showed that he could hurt, he could hurt you for sure. So I think he'll get a call back on that. He's an aggressive guy. And, if you had to go out like that, I think it was quick and he'll bounce back from that. Whereas, we were talking about Luque, that was a prolonged beating that's going to be a tough one to come back from. Like, it's not even like he got knocked out. His body just quit because you could see him. He stumbled a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Definitely a tough guy, but man, he took big shots consistently, and that's going to be a problem. I think for Charlie, sometimes those one punch knockouts, you get away with it a little bit. It's a little different than just sitting in there for like 15 minutes and getting a beating, minute by minute.
You bring up the end of that Jeff Neal Vicente Luque fight. And because it is Dominic Cruz's fight week, I love the no-nonsense Keith Peterson, right? But how can you look at the end of that fight and not suggest that Keith has a longer leash than he did for Cejudo Cruz? How can anyone look me in the eyes and say that his style hasn't evolved to whatever degree?
Let's thank Dominic Cruz for that.
Okay. All right, Cruzy. If you're listening, Dom, on a Monday, if you're
Dom, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dom.
Dom's listening to the Spanish version of the
Anakin Florian podcast. Actually, that is a great idea. That is a great idea. You're giving me thoughts here.
Kenny, you
can't do this show. You can't. Can you do it in full Spanish?
Right now. I'd probably be more confident doing it in Portuguese and Spanish right now. Yeah.
And Ray, do you speak any secondary language to any fighters? I would have. You've had a lot of Asian fighters in your gym. I wonder how much of their native tongue you ever learned. No.
No, minimal. There's so many different languages now.
Yeah.
I just picked up another Georgian kid who grew up in Russia. He looks like he's 5-0. He looks like a killer. And he comes in with a guy that speaks 8 languages except English. So it's a night. Kenny, I got to tell you, it is, then you pull another guy. I don't even know what language this is. It was crazy. I mean, but there's a lot of different languages in here. And
Ray speaks martial arts. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, right. I'll tell you what's funny. No English. And there was nobody in the gym Saturday. The kid came late. I worked out, and I held for him. Didn't need one, because he's that good standing up. Didn't even need to say anything. That's the beauty, is that that's a universal language, you know. So you could even demo it, and if you've been around for a while, you know what's going on anyway. You know what I mean? So that worked out really good, way better than I thought.
All right, so a lot of different things I want to get to as far as your fighters are concerned. And again, we appreciate you joining us. A little Monday, a little primetime Longo, if you're on the video side. Well, looks like Longo just got through a workout,
gym is hard. I mean, it is, it's 120 degrees in there. It's brutal. Yeah. Absolutely brutal. So yeah. I'm in the AC now. I'm in the AC, so I feel good.
All right, 12 days from now, you'll be in Salt Lake City, Utah with Merab Dwalishvili. In the opposite corner, the king of Rio de Janeiro, Jose Aldo. Just get all excited, right? Ken Flo's former opponent, obviously Jose Aldo, the legend in the crosshairs of Merab. We've spent so much time on this show talking about Merab getting these big fights. He finally has one. Do you know what the betting line is as it stands here 12 days out?
Oh, man, no. I'm going to say that Aldo's a slight favorite.
Your guy is slightly favored.
Wow. Okay, so they went the other way. Nice. Well, he's ready to – I mean, look, I didn't see him much this camp. I talked to Aljo. He's been, you know, doing his thing down in Vegas, but I saw him, you know, when I was there with Bazooka, and then he was here for a little bit. But he's definitely raring to go. He's 100% raring to go. It should be an interesting fight.
What type of fight are you expecting? I mean, just Merab just going balls
total,
to the wall.
Total chaos. Yeah, total chaos. That's what I'm expecting.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. and then maybe potentially Abu Dhabi for Aljamain Sterling and TJ Dillashaw. Anything on that front for us?
No, we'll take that right after Merab's fight. Right now, Aljo's really concentrating on Merab, and so is everybody else. So right after that, it's all about Aljamain Sterling.
All right, a couple other things before we let you fly. Dominic Cruz fighting Marlon Chito Vera this weekend. Fascinating main event, given where both men are respectfully and respectively at this stage of their careers. Cruz, obviously, with a couple of wins, and now he's back in title contention. Chito's about a 2-1 favorite. I guess I'm just curious your thoughts on the main event and ultimately which way you're going.
Man, 2-1 favorite. I think that's a little out of line. I somebody's winning by decision. I don't know who.
Think it's going 25 minutes, huh?
Oh, it is 25. It's five
that's
rounds.
It's a main event for you. Get that main event money, you know, 25 minutes.
25 minutes.
Marlon Vera -210, Dominic Cruz +180. Ken Flo can't save you now. He's reserving his prediction.
Yeah. Man, that's a.
You're surprised it's that wide.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's that wide.
Number almost always seems to favor the younger guy in these matchups of contenders.
Cruz has saved himself. He's got the footwork and movement. If he can keep that up for 25 minutes, I think it's enough to. I don't think he could hurt Chito, but I think he could frustrate him. So. Cruz is a smart fighter. I'm sure he's got something worked out, and he's I don't know. I got to tell you, I like Cruz by decision in that fight.
All right, you're on the record. Juicy, juicy main event in San Diego. More on that coming up in the main event challenge. Hey, before we let you go, I know you've seen sort of the tributes pouring in for Leandro Lowe, the former Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner who was seemingly murdered in Brazil. I don't know if you've talked to Matt Serra or anybody else or if you have anything, but I know weighing heavy on Ken Flo and a lot of people out there that we care about, you know.
And how did the murder happen again?
It looked like it was sort of an altercation.
Yeah, I heard one report said he was at a club and some guy swiped a bottle off of his table. And he, you know, went to stop him. A fight broke out. He neutralized the guy, took the bottle back to his table. The guy apparently was an undercover police officer, came back, shot him in the head, may have shot him another couple times, killing him. So, again, you know, you hear these reports. It's still early. You never know, you know, how much truth is associated with it. But just an awful, awful report. Man, the guy was an 8-time world champion, one of the nicest guys, literally like, he was the guy that everybody looked up to, you know, I'm trying to think, he'd be like a Daniel Cormier. It'd be like if Daniel Cormier was,
you know, I gotta tell you that horrible. That is really unfortunate, but it doesn't sound out of order with Brazil. Yeah. I mean, listen, when you can't rely on the cops, man, you understand like the freedoms you have over here. But I don't know the facts, but I'm agreeing that probably is what happened, and that's a damn shame. If nobody's held accountable for that, that's a shame, because that's not the first time we've heard that, Kenny. I think Kenzo's brother, they killed him in jail. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
It's not and I don't think that was another inmate, you know? So, I hate to hear that. Because I tell you, like, that's not the place you want to be fucking around. Right now. It's just not the place you want to be screwing around with anything. And again, I think makes you really thankful for having law and order, you know, as much as we're always complaining about stuff, but it's still not like that, you know. Man, that's a very, very unfortunate. I didn't know the guy was an undercover cop.
Yeah.
Hey, so you're thinking 2023 most likely for Chris Weidman's return?
It looks that way, man. He was good while he was here, but he had trouble with some movement. So what are we in now? August. Yeah, we're looking 2020. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Early, probably. Because I think this last operation was supposed to clear up a lot of things.
Right.
But he definitely was having trouble moving certain directions. I held pads for him just once when he was here, but that's what I remember.
Right. How about when we were just catching a minute at your gym and Bruce Buffer had to get in the 8-minute workout? Oh, everybody's greeting the Godfather right now.
Oh, sorry about that. Oh, man. Sorry.
You know, 10 of 6, you know, a couple early. Guys are a little early for the 6 o'clock showdown. You know,
I love my people. I'm a man of the people.
You are a man of the people. So we had a moment at your gym after dinner. We're taking it all in, and Buffer's doing a workout as we're all just having a little conversation. I have video proof.
No, the Buffer was out of control that night. No, Kenny, he was. Yeah. Kenny, you remember the time
Ray, are the bags still standing over there? Did he knock them off? I mean, he's got some power, that guy.
Let me tell you something. You remember the time we were coming back from Australia, and I was with you, and he goes flying by us, just walking. And Kenny turns to me and goes, Bruce loves Bruce. I don't know what the hell that meant, but the Buff was out of control that night. I really thought he was – I give him an A+. I really enjoyed it. I thought we just – I don't know. It's the simple things for me.
He's
right
a funny
now, Kenny.
Dude.
I swear He's to God, it really dude. Is. That night to me was just hit at the right time where I got to chill out and relax. There's no rushing.
It was perfect.
Didn't have to go anywhere.
So jealous. Ended early.
No, right, it was a really nice time. It really was.
Amazing awesome. Italian meal. And of course, somebody sent over a bottle of red wine, presumably because Buffer was there. So yeah, he was fucking tilted by the end of the night. And it was good. It was good. All right. Hey, you know, as they say, you know, have a great day and a better evening. And unless you've got anything else burning. So is Salt Lake City your next travel? Is that right?
No, I have. So I leave Sunday.
Oh, that's right. Nas.
Yeah, I got Nas. Oh, yeah. Let's shout out to Nas.
Whose world is this? Right? Nas. Yeah. Let's go, Nas.
Yeah, Nas is looking good. And I'm going to tell you, I thought all three guys would get on the show. So we're down to Nas. But Nas is, he's technically really, really, he's a solid kid. And I think you're gonna like watching him fight. So, that's a week from tomorrow.
Let's go, Nas.
Yeah, come on, man. One guy's got to get in.
Got to get it done. Team Sarah Longo. We'll see you in Utah. Have a safe trip to Vegas, and I guess I'll see you in less than a week, my man.
Very good, guys. All right. I feel like I was a little flat today, but
do you?
We'll
you could certainly.
It.
Yeah, well, you elevate the entire room. You know, rising tide lifts all boats.
All right, guys, take it easy.
See you, Ray. See
you. Take it easy.
The Ray Longo Minute every week here on the Anakin Florian Podcast. Yeah, I mean, I got a lot of questions for him, you know. I mean, that's some breaking news on Chris Weidman, you know. Sometimes he doesn't even know he's breaking news, you know. Chris probably like, Ray, could you not talk about the condition of my leg on the Anakin Florian Podcast, if you don't mind?
Tell me I can't move certain ways? Come on.
Not a breaking news platform. If there are fighters you would periodically like to hear from on our show, by all means, you can let us know at Anakin Florian Pod, and we'll try to get some of those athletes to you in short order. But now joining us. Oh, are we excited to have this guy? He went to the commission convention in Niagara Falls. So this guy's got a lot to say. The esteemed reporter, content editor from TSN, Aaron Bronstetter, newly minted nominee for Mixed Martial Arts Journalist of the Year, and deservedly so. Appreciate the time, my man. What's going on?
Hey, not a whole lot. And I appreciate the shout out for the nomination. And I heavily discourage people from loading up multiple accounts and voting for me. That would be unethical. I don't want anybody to do that. So if you're thinking of loading up all kinds of burner accounts to vote for yours truly for the World MMA Awards, very, very unethical. And I don't suggest you do that at all.
Kenny, I wasn't going to do it until he said it. Now I kind of want to stuff the ballot box for our guy AP, you know. But
I know. That's unethical. Unethical. Don't do it.
I was going to vote for the sixth time with my sixth email, but you know what? You can vote me otherwise. I'm not going to.
Yeah. Kenflow6@gmail.com.
Exactly. How'd they know it was me? That's crazy.
Yeah. Kenflow and I celebrate our nominations, though. Yeah, you know, right? No, do you, right? We're just trying to.
We voted for each other already.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. So a lot to get to with you, of course. You know, I was happy to see that this seemingly very informative convention commission thing that you attended in Niagara Falls is annual. So I feel like I can get it in next year. But before we get into Chris Tognoni and the polling episode that was the highlight of your monologue segment this week, what can you tell us overall about your experience in Niagara Falls late July?
Yeah, you know, it was great. And it was similar to the course that you took, I guess, a month prior to that with your fellow broadcasters. Dean Thomas actually came down for the judging part of the conference as well. Apparently, his flight was delayed and I think got canceled. And then he drove overnight from Charlotte to get to Niagara. Now, that's commitment right there from Dean Thomas. Drove overnight from Charlotte to make it to Niagara Falls so that he could do the judging portion of the convention. Just a really, really incredible effort by Dean to make it out there under those circumstances. But yeah, it was really great to learn the refereeing course and the judging course. I had taken Mark Goddard's courses before online, which I highly recommend if you are unable to go to one of these conventions or go to a command course or anything like that. Mark Goddard's course is phenomenal, and you can get to that on his website. But just incredibly informative, and it was fresh in my mind this past weekend when the situation happened in that Bueno Silva against Edgar fight, and I was able to kind of relay that information in real time. So it was just really helpful, and I think that, as you know, from a journalist's perspective, a media perspective, it's really helpful to learn about the legislative end of things.
Before this polling thing happened right in front of all of us this past weekend, was there any major sort of takeaway for you? You know, for me, I thought some of the foul language, not foul language like fuck, foul language in terms of the way the referees operate in those situations was particularly valuable to me, I guess, as a broadcaster. But coming out of there, was there anything that either was enlightening or that you didn't know before that maybe you were even, dare I say, wrong on before?
Yeah, you know, the one that I didn't realize that Sal D'Amato himself kind of discussed was part of the 3 Ds from a 10-8 round. What exactly domination means, how they interpret domination, and the way that that's interpreted is looking for finishes. So if you're talking about, I guess, for example, Aljo versus Jan is one of those rounds that everybody talks about because it was a 10-9 round, that second round. Right. Personally, I believe it was a 10-8 round, but he wasn't necessarily looking for the finish. So he has the duration. Does he have the damage? He was still landing a lot of strikes, but how damaging were those strikes? And then in terms of domination, is he looking for chokes? Is he looking for finishes? I would say he was. But that's where the interpretation lies with the judges to determine what is a 10-8 round and what isn't.
Right. I'm going to let Kenflow chime in here in a second, but I want to get to this polling thing. So if you missed it this weekend, it was an early fight, a submission involving Maeda Bueno Silva, I believe. Tell us what happened, if you'd be so kind, and ultimately how masterfully you thought it was handled by the referee, Chris Tognoni.
Yeah, so Maeda Bueno Silva has Edgar in an arm bar. Chris Tognoni's right on top of the action. Unfortunately, he can only be on one side of the action because the cage is on the other side of the action. So with the blindside hand, Edgar taps, at least seemingly, because Bueno Silva lets go of the hold, says she tapped. Chris Tognoni then has two options, which is you stop the fight, and then you go through the protocol of what you need to do in order to determine what the correct outcome is. Or you say, fight on, because I didn't stop the fight. Myra's not allowed to stop the fight. Stephanie's not allowed to stop the fight. Right, nobody sitting cage side is allowed to stop the fight. Only I may stop the fight because I'm the sole arbiter of the action. So Maeda Bueno Silva, let's go to the hold, says she tapped. And Maeda advises Chris, you know, go look at the tape. They look at the tape and there's not a good angle. I mean, if the UFC doesn't have a good angle, imagine on the regional scene when you have like one, maybe two camera operators looking for action. So then if you look at the replay, one thing you can notice is if you look at the very corner, Ron McCarthy, one of the judges, is right there. Like he's right on the blind side of where Chris Tognoni is not able to get to where the tap takes place. So what Chris Tognoni then does is he does something called polling the officials, which is you go cage side, you say, did anybody see what happened? Ron McCarthy says, I saw her tap. Apparently Herb Dean did as well. And then from there, Chris Tognoni has enough to go back and determine that it was in fact a submission. So that's what he did. And I thought he handled it perfectly based on the situation. And from what I had learned just a couple weeks ago, that whole protocol couldn't have been handled better by Chris Tognoni.
And Aaron, if that was a situation where, let's see, the other referees weren't able to see it, would have just been restarted, or?
No, it's over. He had waved it off.
It would have been over. He had waved it off already. So if he waved it off, even though he didn't see anything, it still would have been over.
Would have been over if they were unable to make a determination where the replay didn't show it, nobody site saw anything. It probably would just be a no contest. I don't know how you could rule it as a no contest other than just saying it's, you know, a no contest referee stoppage. But that's probably what would have ended up happening had they not been able to determine whether or not Egger had tapped. Judging by the body language, it was pretty clear that she did. She didn't debate, you know, she didn't protest it at all.
Right.
After a little bit of time passed, she made it look like, maybe, you know, I didn't.
Yeah,
do anything,
exactly.
But
how are you,
you know,
Kenny, how are you coaching your jujitsu players in the UFC though? Right. I mean, you know, Kenflo want to make sure, I don't want to speak out of turn, but Kenflo's got to make sure you tap out before he's letting go. He's still Ustamar Poyatis, but Kenflo's
instructed to do. That's what you're instructed to do. The referee says you need to, I stop the fight. You don't stop the fight. So if they're tapping and I don't see it, you just hang on to that hold.
My man, that's exactly right. I experienced that in a grappling tournament and I had got an arm bar. The guy had tapped. I let go immediately. Then the guy said he didn't tap. Eventually, we had to find someone who had a video in the tournament, which, again, was not official protocol. But, again, that stayed with me. Like, do not let go until the referee actually stops you. And that was just a grappling match, not even an MMA match. So that's one of the things that stayed with me because, again, not everyone is going to be honorable and say that they tap.
Right. Didn't you have to beat Kit Cope twice? But that was maybe a TKO situation.
It was. Yeah. It was a submission. Yeah, it was a submission. I submitted him at the end of the round. He did tap, but Herb Dean had said the round was over, and then I ended up submitting him with a rear naked choke. Yeah.
So I'll beat you again because I'm just ruthless.
That's how I'm built.
So you mentioned Dean Thomas and all of his heroism in driving from Charlotte to Niagara Falls, New York, and absolutely bless him for making that drive. And I'm not the least bit surprised because a few days prior, I was flying home with him. We both live in South Florida, and he was talking about open scoring and his push for it and his agenda and his presentation and everything else. So I know it was a huge priority of his to be there. Did you catch any of that from him? And ultimately, where do you stand after hearing what he had to say on the merits of open scoring?
I had left. I wasn't there that day, but I did listen to it live on YouTube.
He drove all the way, AB, and you're fucking gone. I mean,
well, I had to go to Dallas. I had to go to Dallas. I have an excuse. Okay. So, but I did get to listen to it while he was doing it, like live on YouTube. It was being streamed. Right. So I listened to his whole talk about it. And, you know, it's very insightful. It's one of those things where I don't think we're going to see it. And I think that one of the reasons is it really does take the drama out of things. Now, that's not the fighter's problem. The fighters want to have open scoring. The coaches want to have open scoring. But if you're a promotion and you want to make the sport as exciting as possible, I kind of don't blame them for not pushing for open scoring in that regard. And open scoring, I've seen it in boxing. If you go and watch Canelo versus Trout, that was an extremely close boxing match. But it happened to take place in San Antonio, right near the border of Mexico. And you see the open scoring and Canelo's cruising. But if you're watching the actual boxing match itself, it was a close match. But of course, by the time it ends, you know who's won. So it has its merits and it also has its subtractions, I guess, from how people will consume it when watching live.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers and I don't want to sort of drag the program down with all of that. But Dean seems pretty impassioned that it would solve all our problems. And well, I think, you know, I can be swayed on both sides, but he didn't sway me as much as he thought that day at the airport. I probably brown-nosed him a little bit. All right. Want to get your thoughts on Jamahal Hill and then some UFC 278 stuff on the way out, if we can be so inclined. And of course, Cheeto and Dom coming up. I could go in a number of different ways. But, you know, I'm high on Jamahal Hill. Ken Flo is high on him, which I think matters even more. Your thoughts on his sort of light heavyweight ceiling after what we saw in the main event just a few days ago?
Well, it seems like every week when there's a big light heavyweight fight, everybody's like, oh, that guy's got to be next. It's Jamahal Hill, Nikolaev, it's Blachowicz. We don't really know. But I mean, listen, that was a great fight. The thing that was surprising to me was that Santos was up on two of the scorecards, because personally, I thought you could make a case that Jamahal Hill won all three of those rounds. But be that as it may, he's an impressive individual, really, really tough, great striking, crisp striking. And I think the sky's the limit for him. Still quite young. And the light heavyweight division is kind of wide open right now outside of what I think is going to be the rematch next between Jiří and Glover. Right. Then you got a lot of different players. You got, like I mentioned, Błachowicz, you got Ankalaev, you got Jamahal Hill. So it's, I think there has to be a bout that takes place. And you know what? The promotion kind of has leverage, because you say to all three of these guys, we're going to make a matchup. You're either in or you're out, right? So there's going to be an odd man out in the situation.
No, you're right. With Jan Błachowicz and Jamahal Hill and Magomed Ankalaev, just say, all right, who wants to sign on the dotted line? Maybe headline on this date. I'm telling you, though, Jamahal Hill goes no blunts for 6 weeks, no backwoods for 6 weeks, wins a world title. I'm telling you, you know, put down the blunts. All right. UFC 278 is coming up. I have some early big fight odds for you. Have you looked at these presumably at this point in time at all?
I have. I don't have them off the top of my head, but yeah, right. Definitely.
No, that's good that you don't. Longo seemed somewhat surprised that Jose Aldo wasn't favored. I mean, right now on DraftKings Sportsbook, Merab Dvalishvili minus 120, Jose Aldo even money. Properly priced in your mind?
Yeah, I would say so, because I think it's one of those contests where if either one of them is able to implement their game plan, they're going to win the fight, right? Like if it takes place on the feet, I imagine that Aldo is going to win. If Merab is able to get it to the ground, which is easier said than done, as we've seen against Aldo over the years, you know, Kenny can attest to that. We see how that one's going to go. I think Merab, if he's able to get him down, that he's going to win that fight. But I couldn't convince you either way as to which one of those two things is going to happen. So I think even money makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think Ken Flo is going to be on Jose Aldo at even money when he makes those predictions next week. Paulo Costa minus 275, Luke Rockhold plus 230. Your thoughts on that matchup and the, I would say, prohibitive price on Paulo Costa.
God, that's such a tough one to call, because there's so much information that you'd like to know going into it. I say you wait until both these guys get on the scale, and then you can make a determination, because both guys have had trouble making it to 105. Is this at 205 or is this at 185?
That is going to be a middleweight fight as far as I know.
So let's wait until these gentlemen get on the scale before we make a prediction there, because we saw what happened with Costa last time where he outright refused to make middleweight, and we've seen Rockhold have trouble making it as well. In fact, Rockhold had moved to 205 up until recently, so eager to see how that plays out. But, you know, Costa hasn't looked good, of course, against Israel, didn't look good. In his last fight against Vittori, he looked okay. And we haven't really seen Rockhold look that great in recent years either. So it's hard to make a prediction for a fight like this. You almost want to just take the underdog in Rockhold and see what happens.
I was surprised. I mean, again, I write these down beforehand. I had Rockhold even given the layoff plus 170, plus 230 seemed big for me. Yeah, middleweight co-main event. And then Kamaru Usman minus 340, Leon Edwards plus 280. I think I remarked that, having hosted the UFC 278 press conference and being that close to Leon for the first time, he's huge. I mean, maybe I'm just fucking little. He's big. Like, his hands aren't as big as Kamaru's, but I don't know. You know, I think Leon Edwards is going to put up a fight. You know, how concerned would you be if you were a Kamaru Usman super fan for this second fight with Leon Edwards?
Hey, you know, it's funny. We see Edwards standing next to Usman and everybody's like, wow, Edwards is huge. And then you see Usman standing next to Błachowicz, and it's like, Usman can make 205. It's like, which is it? Which is it here? So can Edwards make 205 then? But yeah, this is an interesting one, because I think on the feet, Edwards has a good technical advantage over Usman, but Usman has made no secret that he's going to try to take him down. And if he's going to utilize that game plan, I'm going Usman by decision all day. You could probably get that at around even money. I think that's the most likely outcome of this fight. I don't see Usman getting a finish that easily against a guy like Leon Edwards. I mean, has anybody finished Leon Edwards in the UFC? I don't believe so. I think he just has that loss to Usman by decision. And, of course, he had one other loss, if I'm not mistaken. I guess it was Claudio Silva, if I recall correctly, and that was a decision as well. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But I don't see Usman getting a finish here. I think Usman wins by decision more likely than not. And like I said, if that's around even money, that's the way to go in my eyes.
All right, and last thing, are you going to be in San Diego this weekend or no?
I'm not going to be in San Diego. In fact, I don't know if I'm traveling until September. I might be at Diaz versus Chimaev. And if I'm not at that, I won't be till November. I'll be in New York. But yeah, I'm not going to San Diego. I wish I was. I've never been to San Diego. And it's a beautiful city year-round. Apparently, even Steven temperatures year-round, which just sounds tremendous to me.
I mean, I feel like I've been everywhere, even though I'm in my hotel room most of the time. And San Diego, California, to this day, is the prettiest place I've ever been.
And the last event predates you in the UFC, right? That was Jones versus the janitor, Vladimir Matsushenko, and the debut of Charles O'Hara.
I did Holly Holm and Marion Renault, I seem to recall, in 2015, the lone time I was in San Diego.
Oh, that was San Diego. Okay. I thought the last card was that Jones Matsushenko.
I must be wrong. I feel like it's the only time I went to San
Diego. We did Mir and Duffy in San Diego.
Holm and Renault might not have been the main event, you know? Yeah. It might have been Mir and Duffy. I think you're right. Yeah. Reference our show open for Ken Flo's call. All right. Last thing. I know you're not going to be in San Diego, AB, but Dominic Cruz and Chito Vera. Chito's minus 210. Dom's like plus 180. Ray Longo seemed to be surprised that Dom was that big an underdog. Talk to me, man. I mean, I know you have pretty strong thoughts on these things. What kind of chance do you give Dominic Cruz here to try to spring the upset against a very motivated, obviously, Chito Vera?
Dominic Cruz has a good chance of beating just about anybody at bantamweight if he gets his game going the way that he has in the past. If his timing is on, if his footwork is on, he's a tough puzzle to solve. But as we've seen with Chito Vera, the thing with him is early on, the first round or two was almost a write-off for Chito Vera. He takes a lot of time to feel his opponents out. You saw the Frankie Edgar fight, for example. Edgar was up in that fight. It takes Vera a lot of time to kind of read his opponents. But once he gets those reads down, like he did against Rob Font, he capitalizes. And I think this fight being a 5-round fight is to the detriment of Dominic Cruz. I think the longer this fight goes, the better chance you give Vera of getting a win here. I think Vera could get a stoppage round 4, round 5, if he's able to figure out Dominic Cruz's timing, which is a lot easier said than done. But as Dominic gets older and as the game continues to evolve, not that Dominic Cruz isn't evolving with it, because he's watching fights more than almost anybody else. He's their cage side. He's picking up little nuances all the time. But from what I've seen from Vera, he just seems to get better and better as the fight goes on. I think he's going to be most dangerous in those late rounds.
Very excited to see it play out. My anticipation for that fight is just off the charts. And we'll see. Yeah, Dom feels like that matchup actually for him is more favorable, 25 minutes as opposed to 15. But we shall see. If you want more from the credentialed Aaron Bronstetter on social media, it's his name, at Aaron Bronstetter. We appreciate your time, my man. Enjoy those children. And we will see you in September, my man, hopefully in Las Vegas.
Always, sir. Very excited to watch this event in San Diego. Like you mentioned, that's a banger of a main event. I'm looking forward to it greatly.
There he is, Aaron Bronstetter, with us here on the Anik and Florian podcast. All right. I'm glad I don't have to make a prediction. It is UFC Fight Night, Vera versus Cruz. We will start with the pronunciation of the week as we call on Cody. Hi, Cody. What's going on, kid?
What's up? Kenflo, good to see you again, my pal.
What's up, dude?
Got to link up with Kenflo.
You guys.
Well, hey, fun fact. Kenflo is bigger than he looks on the camera. They say the camera adds 10 pounds. I think real life adds about 15 pounds of muscle. You see Kenflo walking down the street.
Fuck you up.
Jean cutoffs. You ain't messing with those thighs, let me tell you.
Man.
You end up in a triangle before you know it.
I'm trying to tell you people. I mean, UFCFightPass.com, as we look back at some of his fights, I mean, not like a nice guy. You know, he ain't no Maeda Bueno Silva, right? I mean, you know, 70 acre, you can grapple Kenflo, sit the fucking hospital, getting her arm like completely screwed back together. It's fucking ruthless, this kid. I'm just kidding. He's the ultimate sports.
You're not kidding. But did you know that she tied Ronda Rousey for the most arm bars in female history with that?
She's no way. She probably knows when someone is tapping, and she was very sportswoman-like. There's no doubt about it.
I wouldn't do that. There's no honor in battle, is there? I mean, a jiu-jitsu tournament, sure, but like, I ain't. Oh, phantom tap? The ref didn't stop me? We're going. We're fighting. Sorry.
Yeah. Make a wish.
Well, in UFC Long Island, I was next to Sarge Eubanks, and she said the same thing when the Watterson tap. I was like, it's like, ref didn't see it. No tap happened. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Kenflo didn't even fight when he had children. Could you imagine right now going into an octagon?
You think he lets go?
No. You know what? Maybe I'll snap your arm in two and get an extra $50K for my son Archer. How about that? You know?
Arch that arm the wrong way.
Oh, my goodness. You guys are hilarious.
notice he's not countering what we're saying.
No, because he saw my application to the Kenny Florian fan club come in. He's like, well, I got a president. Time to sign off on the next member. Let's go.
Did Maeda Bueno Silva get a bonus? I mean, can we find out that information? Maybe you fucking crank the arm, you get an extra 50K. Congrats to Juliana Miller, by the way, for winning the Ultimate Fighter. I meant to bring her up. But yeah, if you could chase that for me at some point on the bonuses, we'll see if Maeda Bueno Silva was rewarded for her sportswoman like
she was not. She was no not. Jeff Neal, Muhammad Usman, Brian Battle, and Jamal Hill.
Oh, how about Brian Battle? Yeah, great. Obviously, a lot of competition there. And Bueno Silva's fight happened early in the night. But you just never know. You fucking snap that arm, might get that 50K. All right, we got a pronunciation of the week. Kevlo, what do you got?
You good? Oh, no, I was just laughing.
Yeah,
oh, my
I
God.
Know. It's been a long day. All right, pronunciation
like
of the
John,
week.
Actually, Cody is 5'9 in person. Like, you're full of shit. Not true. I'm actually tall.
He is tall. All our guys are tall on the Anakin floor. Like, honestly. You know, just, you know, be careful you cross this Anakin Florian podcast, right? Cody Merrow's every bit 6 feet. Brian Petrie's a fucking monster, right? Ken Flo speaks for himself, fought for the UFC title 3 times. You know, Longo fucking fill up a room. That guy looked like a fucking side of a backyard shed. He'll fuck you up. And, you know, I got cardio.
Sorry. Oh, man.
This guy, good thing Ray doesn't watch the show, huh?
Ray and Buffer, I'd be dead if Ray and Buffer watched the show back.
And you'd never know. We'd never know about it. You'd be out. They'd be bringing you out of Lake Mead when the drought gets too low.
You're right. All right.
This is kind of Modelo barrel.
Oh, man. All right. Pronunciation of the week. Wheels are off at this point. This man faces Martin Budai in the UFC's heavyweight division, part of the ESPN prelim portion this Saturday at Pechanga, or is it Pechanga Arena? Either way, it's in San Diego. Cody, who's this heavyweight we're talking about, brother?
So, Polish fighter, I believe, right? Which is why I'm either going to butcher this or get it close. Lukasz Brzezki.
It's spelled B-R-Z-E.
Yeah, I'm going to put it on screen for moving forward. Sorry, spoiler alert. I'm going to put it on screen for the fans. Someone had a good comment on the YouTube.
That is a good comment. So, all right, well, let's hear this. Let's hear LB say his name.
Lukasz Brzezki. Lukasz Brzezki.
Brzezki.
Brzezki. So is it Dre or is it Dre?
I know. It sounded like you said Dre the first time. The second time was Brzezki.
If you want Lukasz Brzezki.
You know, people think I just blow smoke up Kenny's ass, but he has such an ear for these. And yes, the surname was said 2 different ways, so I have no idea on the last name. Why are you messing around with Lukasz, though? What? I mean, you messed up the first name, my man.
That's not well. Lukasz. Isn't it not Lukasz?
Is it Lukasz? It's Lukasz, right?
Is it? Does Lukasz. He say it, Lukasz? Is he whiting it up? That's BS, yeah. Dude.
Whiten
you know what? Sometimes
up,
I think the problem is like they say it the way that they think that Americans should say it, so they're like already throwing me like a handicap.
Yeah,
that's what
Lukasz,
I think.
Lukasz. We're gonna get canceled. We may get canceled.
Oh, we're gonna because I'm gonna have to go back and edit Ray, or else we're going to get canceled. So
yeah, please do that, and we'll see you in about 15 minutes for the Merrow seconds.
All right, you don't want the other one?
You mean Mohamed Usman's opponent?
Correct.
Yeah. So we haven't mentioned Zach's surname because we were talking about this before the show. Another challenge for the broadcast team. Yeah, let's hear Mohamed Usman's opponent.
My name is Zach the Ripper Paunga. Zach the Ripper Paunga.
Paunga. Paunga. Paunga.
Paunga.
Paunga.
Paunga.
Should
talk That'll
to
be on screen too, and there's no N in sight. I'll promise you that as the fans.
Yeah.
Is that a Hawaiian name? Samoan name? I don't know. All right. Well, we got to move on. Cody, we'll see you in 15 minutes. UFC Fight Night Vera versus Cruz. Let us get to some predictions. It is time for the main event challenge.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian.
I finished fights. I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
Yeah!
Hey!
Yanni! You're stealing my baby face look, dude. This is trademark. Look how gorgeous. Look at that clean shave.
This was circumstantial. I had a dermatologist look at something on my face, and she said it was nothing. So we just shaved for that. And now it's
okay.
But yeah, I mean, Cody's like, "Oh, you've been lifting or something?" No, I just shaved my fat face. So good to see you. I don't know how much of this show you've been backstage for, sort of off the rails a little bit at this point in time on a Monday night, but it's good to see you.
I love it. I came in halfway through AB. I miss Ray. I usually like to see Ray, but I got a little behind today. So, good to see you, boys. Ready to talk these fights.
Great to see you, too. Any thoughts on Jamahal Hill before we move on?
Boyd's got the dog in his chest. That dude, I mean, I literally sent out a tweet. I was like, you know, cardio's not passing my eye test. And then he just dug deep. You know, I mean, the guy was stopping 20 takedowns at 205 pounds against a beast in Santos. Yeah, you're going to be tired. But once he started landing, because I felt like he was had trouble finding his range and stuff and trying to find Santos's head. I wish he would have mixed it up a little bit more. He headhunted a little bit. But when he did find his range, he's a problem. He's nasty in there. I mean, he's a killer, and he's a pure finisher too.
He's fun to follow, you know, can carry a fight week. Good stuff for Jamahal Sweet Dreams Hill. Probably a guy we should get on the Anik and Florian podcast when Ken Flo's having a better hair day. All right, first pick for us in the middleweight division. Bruno Silva, minus 280. Gerald Merchart plus 235. So GM3. Oh, I mean, dude, earlier we're doing like cigarette nicknames, right?
Adam,
no,
like a lot of humidity where I'm at.
Yeah. I love it. Me too. So
cigarette
hard.
Nicknames earlier. We go in, you know, dirt sticks and lung darts, and Cody throws coffin nails in the chat room. It's like I can't even fucking keep his face.
Guys in Cincinnati calls them heaters. Hey, can I borrow a heater? Can I get a heater? Heater. Yeah.
I like heater. Heater's a good one. Heater definitely is in the top five. Mount Rushmore of cigarette nicknames, if you will. All right. Bruno Silva, Gerald Merchart. So GM3 had won three in a row before he lost to Chris Jocko on points back in April. Silva, obviously, you guys know him all too well. Only UFC loss came in style back in March to one Alex Pereira, who, of course, is now fighting for the title. Brian Petrie, what do you have for us on this one, kid?
Man, I always think GM, I feel like he's always plus money, and I always give him a good look. Like, man, this dude can do it. GM3, I mean, the guy gets beat up, he comes back and submit you. He's a dog on the ground. He's good. He's tough. And six out of seven losses for Bruno Silva will come by submission. So you're like, oh, there you go. There's the stats. There's the handicapper in me. But then it's my guts telling me, this big old Midwestern guts going, yeah, but Bruno Silva's got those bricks, and Jeremy Miskar's been knocked out before. It's just a really tough. I thought Bruno Silva looked really good in the Pereira fight, which is a really tough guy to look good against. He got dropped. He showed heart. I think the ground game's obviously going to be a question here, but I think GM3's wrestling is just a little, you know, he's not afraid to pull guard. I don't know if he's going to be able to use his wrestling all that much. So the value boys out there, unite and hammer GM3. So I can get the silver number down, because I am ice fucking cold and I need a win. So that's what we're going to do. I'm going to go silver here, probably by stoppage. I don't see a decision. I see him catching him. And I wish I could take the dog money, because every time Mirskart's a dog, I just look at it. But I'm going to play a little safe here.
He is a dog guy in more ways than one. If he ever has children, they're going to look at his Wikipedia page and they're going to be like, man, my dad fought some absolute killers and submitted a lot of these guys when people did not expect him to. Ken Flo, your thoughts on Gerald Merchart against Bruno Silva here?
I'll keep it pretty short. I think there's value in Merchart for sure. I think that he can get it done. I think Bruno is a little bit too big of a favorite, but I think Bruno, with his striking and his ability to also be dangerous on the feet, will probably be the difference. I'd say most likely Silva by decision here.
Bruno Silva is absolutely frightening in the best of ways.
Yeah, tough.
All right. Cynthia Calvillo, minus 150. Nina Nunes, plus 130. This fight, as you guys know, was to happen back on July 9th. Nunes fell ill on fight day. She hasn't competed since the Mackenzie Dern fight. That was a quick one more than a year ago. Calvillo on the other side, also in need of a win here, Bri. Last win for her came against Jessica I, June of 2020. What are your thoughts on Calvillo and Nunes here?
So I'm glad they rebooked this, because I was on Nunes, you know, a couple weeks ago as the dog money. And now that we got to see Amanda fight her wife, we got to see what that new training camp's like, the new head coach. And I love the adjustments that Amanda made. And I'm hoping that parlays into what Nina's going to look. I think Nina was an underrated fighter for a while. She read off four wins in a row, dropped a loss and then had a kid and then came back against Mackenzie Dern. I think she's very, very good. And Cynthia Calvillo, excuse me, she just looked unmotivated in her last fight. She's a tough warrior, and I thought she was going to go places. She's 35 now. In the Andrea Lee fight, she looked unmotivated. Didn't look like she wanted to be there, and that's the last place you want to be fighting someone in the cage if you don't want to be there. So I'm hoping she's got her ducks in a row, whatever is happening outside the cage. Hopefully she's motivated because I think it's going to be a competitive fight. And when it's a competitive fight, we're looking 50-50. I'm going to go dog shot here. I'm going to go Nina Nunes at the dog money here. I won't let myself down if I don't take a dog shot, so I'm going to take Nunes.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a good cap. Kenny, I do think it's interesting in terms of the motivation on both sides. I do believe Nina is still highly, highly motivated, and I think you'll see a good effort and training camp on the front end of it for Cynthia Calvillo as well. But I do wonder for Nunes, there's just a lot of circumstances. Like, I think the Amanda result helps Nina, but, you know, going to Dallas and being sick, I don't think it's like perfectly ideal for Nina necessarily. Sure. In terms of some of these surrounding circumstances, but Ken Flo, ultimately we need a pick. So which way are you going?
Yeah, but I think after, canceling that last fight, I don't think she would fight if she wasn't feeling great. And I also think that, like Brian was saying, having the new camp, I'm sure she's feeling good. With Calvillo, I just don't know. So I'm a little bit more secure going with Nunes than I am with Calvillo. I'd like to see some kind of, either motivation change or some kind of skill development with Calvillo, where I would even go a little bit even further than Brian, where I would say she regressed on a technical level. You know, maybe there was the lack of motivation too, but on a technical level, it almost seemed like she didn't have some of those skills that she used to have before. So, and I was high on Calvillo. I think she had a lot of potential, but yeah, I like Nunes here as well.
I think that's fair. And she has bounced around a lot, Cynthia has, and hasn't really found that right home. So we'll see if this is it. All right. At light heavyweight, Azamat Mirzakhanov, -170. Devin Brown Bear Clock, +145. We're only picking this fight because I just love saying fucking Clock, you know. So Clock knocked out William Knight back in April. That was his heavyweight debut. This one back at 205 pounds for Devin Clock. Mirzakhanov is undefeated, came off the Contender Series, won his UFC debut, 11-0 overall, but certainly long on potential as such the favorite here. Brian Petrie, what do you have for us?
Yeah, Mirzakhanov was MMA Twitter's darling. I mean, this everyone had the Google ads for him. They put him in this parlay, and he was losing that fight, and then he pulled a rabbit-ass hat, needed a Hail Mary, and he delivered. You can't take anything away from him, but I just feel like his outside work in the UFC, which I capped, was a little pedestrian. He does have a win over Andre Munez. Quick knockout. That's obviously impressive. But other than that, I think it's a little bit weak. Then you enter Devin Clark, who's 13-6 record, doesn't jump off the page, but he's fucking fought everyone. The guy's legs are the size of a Buick, athletic. His dad, I'm going to hire as my motivational speaker. I love his dad in his corner. And, you know, he's willing to fight a heavyweight. He's willing to fight anybody. You know, he gets his teeth mangled, doesn't quit. You know, the guy's got a lot of heart. So, and he's also really tricky. He's an awkward style of guy. You know, he used to be just kind of a pure grappler. I'm going to hang on to you, clinch you. Now he's knocking guys out. You know, he's finding his power. He's finding his rhythm. Mirzakhanov looked a little slow in that fight. I thought his hands looked quick in the beginning, and then slowed down significantly. You slow down against Devin Clark, the fight's going to slowly drift away from you. So I like Devin Clark here by decision. I think he's going to, you know, have maybe a rough first round and then slowly start putting things together and come back. And I like his experience here. Yeah, give me Devin Clark.
Devin Clark can be had at +145 right now on DraftKings Sportsbook. Ken Flo, 30-foot octagon, presumably in San Diego, which is probably something worthwhile to factor in on some of these. Ken Flo, what do you have for us on the light heavies?
Yeah, listen, I think when Devin Clark's on his game, he's a problem. He's extremely dangerous. When he's not, I feel like, he's susceptible to lose to anybody in that division sometimes. So I see a lot of promise with him. Sometimes I don't see the best decision-making out there. Mirzakhanov, seeing that he's undefeated, he has beaten some guys, good guys in my opinion. You know, Muniz, Mateusz Szefle is a pretty tough guy. In my opinion, Guto and Asensch as well, pretty decent. So I don't know. I think he's got, he's a little bit raw. He's not the most technical guy either, but if things get nasty, I don't know. It's tough to say. But I guess I'll go with the guy who's been more consistent, certainly hasn't had the same level of fights that Devin has, but, I'll go with Mirzakhanov here.
Good stuff. All right. Co-main event. in the UFC's featherweight division. Pretty good fight here. David Onama minus 195. Nate Landwehr plus 165. So Onama just fought, won by submission July 9th, 10-1 overall. He draws the 15-4 Nate Landwehr. He was to face Lerone Murphy back in March and actually Zubair Tuhugov last weekend. Instead, he gets Onama. It's a big opportunity for both men. Co-main event, Bri. Who do you have here?
Nate the Train, baby. This guy. I love this guy. I want to see him fight in Columbus, and the fight got pulled. I was devastated. He's a cross between a Diaz brother and 3-6 Mafia is what this guy's a cross between. I mean, the guy is electric in the cage, exciting on the mic. I love him. 2-2 in the UFC. He did great stuff in M1. He was a champion in M1, looked great, had high hopes for him, put a lot of money on him in his debut against Herbert Burns. Need change that. But I think he slowly, he changed up his game or his camp a little bit. Luva Klein, his last time out, he looked great. We all saw how good Luva Klein looked against Mason Jones. That's a really good win for Nate, and he submitted him. But David Onama, this guy has impressed me from day one. He's a James Krause guy, really just still coming into his own, but big, powerful strikes. He showed submissions his last time out. And, man, I think this guy's going to be top five eventually. You know, if he's not top five by the end of his career, I'll get Cody's face tattooed on my ass. I'm a bold prediction guy. That's what's going to happen. I think this kid's legit. I think he's a little green right now. I think his striking's good. His takedown's good. His cardio's good. Gets hit a lot. Got to move that head a little more. Can't be willing to exchange in the pocket. But Nate the Train, he's a guy that likes to put the pressure on you, uses his cardio as a weapon, but he also gets put out early. Julian Rosa got him early. Herbert Burns got him early. I think if David Onama jumps on him early, I think it's going to be a problem. And I have no bones about it that I have been a biased capper when it comes to guys I like. And I love Nate the Train, but I just think Onama's going to beat him here in round one. Knockout round one. No bias here. I like Onama by knockout early, and I'm gonna play heavy on it, too. I'm gonna lean on that prop. Probably the prop's probably not going to be as juicy as I want, but we'll get that round one prop in there.
I like it. David Onama, the pick to click for Brian Petrie. And if David Onama leaves the UFC for good, or I guess retires from MMA and doesn't get top five, Brian's getting Cody Mero's ass tattooed.
He's getting face tattooed on my ass.
That's great. I'm actually rooting against Onama now, you know?
Let's see that. Yeah, well, you know, Cody's a good-looking guy. I could have worse people in my ass, so.
All right, Kempflo, what do you have on the co-main, my man?
I think it would have been really interesting if he got if Cody's ass on his face. That would have been
that'd be
really
interesting.
Good. That would be even more interesting. Yeah, go Cody. Cody, can you send me a picture? I'm on my way to the tattoo parlor.
Yeah, my tattoo artist is a picture of your ass.
Awkward ass. Yeah. Well, listen, I'm with Brian here. I think that Nate is very aggressive, but I think his style lends itself very well to Onama, who. I don't think he's going to have to go looking for a fight here. So I think it's going to be exciting while it lasts. But I take Onama's power and speed here as well. I think he probably gets the KO.
All right. And as we get ready to predict our main event, 2022 records for you guys. Kenflo 63-35-1. Brian Petrie 62-36-1. Pretty incredible.
We're right there, Kenflo. I love it, babe.
All right, I'm going to have Kenflo lead.
Toys.
Kenny's going to lead on the main event. Hopefully that is enough notice. Marlon Chito Vera, minus 210. Dominic Cruz is plus 180. Second straight UFC main event for Chito, and it comes against the former two-time UFC bantamweight champ, Dominic Cruz. Cruz has won a couple in a row. Cheeto's won three straight. Marlon Vera, the most prolific finisher in UFC bantamweight history. I could say that twice. I mean, double underline it. And he's never been finished as a pro, Kenflo. He's a 2-1 favorite here against Dominic Cruz, one of my best friends in the world. And I actually thought that Marlon might even be minus 240. That is nothing predictive about my statement. But I just think, given what Chito has accomplished, you know, he deserves this distinction. What are your thoughts on the UFC Fight Night main event?
I think it's a fascinating fight. I mean, could these guys be any different in their approach to mixed martial arts? Marlon Chito Vera is a finisher through and through. I love his style. Always moving forward. Not the fastest starter, but as AB was talking about earlier, you know, it's something I have seen. Once he gets his rhythm and he figures you out, watch out. I think he's particularly a problem from that clinch position. Knee elbow combination, some of the best in the game, perhaps the best at 135 pounds. And the way he walks you down is going to be a problem for a lot of people. The problem is Dominic Cruz isn't a lot of people. I think his footwork, his speed, while it's perhaps diminished a little bit because of injuries and things like that, I still think it's good enough to avoid that forward pressure style from Marlon Chito Vera. And I also agree that because it's five rounds, Marlon has more time to adjust and adapt. But, you know, assuming Dominic Cruz does what he does and is disciplined and sticks to his game plan, I think it's going to be hard for Marlon because sometimes he gets a little bit, he plods a little bit, he gets a little flat footed. And against Dominic Cruz, he's constantly moving. So if Dominic can zing in and out, tag him, move, hit some takedowns when he needs to, land some ground and pound, get out, get up, get out, frustrate Marlon Chito Vera and not get caught up in, the emotional part of the fight game, I think it's a good fight for Dominic. I think his experience is significant enough, and I think he's going to be disciplined enough to be able to do that for 25 minutes. So I think it's an extremely dangerous fight for Marlon. And I think the big question mark for me, as I'm thinking about this fight, is Dominic Cruz 100% healthy? Has his body held up to these brutal training camps time and time again? We don't know. That is a question mark for me, but I do think that Dominic Cruz's footwork, his intelligence, his experience is going to be the difference and will allow him to get a decision win against one of the most dangerous guys and one of the hottest fighters in the bantamweight division right now.
Beautifully put, Ken Flo. I can't put it past Dom to lie to me, Bri, but he has been able to stack training camps and to get those hard rounds that really for him are absolute prerequisites to octagon success. Doesn't necessarily mean it'll be enough. I think anyone who listens to this show knows how much respect I have for Chito. I do think he's an eventual champion, but a huge test for him, obviously, coming up Saturday night in San Diego. Your thoughts, Brian, on the main event?
Yeah, Kenny killed that. Kenny killed that breakdown. That was spot on. And man, I tell you what, I respect JA so much, and Dom's his boy. And John's my boy. Nothing's gonna be disrespectful. And I want to clear something up. I was critical of Dom's commentary. That doesn't mean anything of what I think about him as a fighter. I think he's the GOAT bantamweight. You can't argue that. And I love his fighting style. He's one of my favorite fighters to watch. I've tried to emulate his footwork on the bag poorly, but I've tried to do it several times. And I think after he's said and done, the commentating and everything, but he also really needs to sit down with fighters, talk about the mental toughness, the IQ. What this guy's had to come back from is unheard of every other fighter. No bias to the side. But Dom come off a good one over Munoz, got dropped, showed that toughness that he always talks about, and then went back and won the final two rounds in a competitive fight. I thought he won clear against Casey Kenney. I know they have a split decision. I thought that was a dominating win for – maybe not dominating, but I thought he won all three rounds. And I thought that was a good win for Dom, too. Casey Kenney, another up-and-coming guy. But, Cheeto's in the pocket right now. You know what I mean? He's just – and I've said that a few times about fighters. He's just feeling himself. He's good. I've seen some clips on Instagram of him working the mitts and working, training stuff. And he looks to be in shape. He looks to be focused, comfortable. And, he has no short of confidence right now. And it's going to be an interesting fight because Dom Cruz, his footwork still puzzles people to this day. People still can't figure it out. Even though it's a little slower than before, he's still giving guys trouble. And I feel like Dom's actually sitting down and committing to some of his punches, what he wasn't doing in the past. I think Dom is really trying to sit down, especially in the Casey Kenney and the Munoz fight. He was really sitting down. Both guys are nails. And I think everyone said it. I think, Cheeto's going to drop some of those early rounds. He plots and he slows and he gets his read. But when he gets his read, he's just deadly accurate. I mean, I don't think he overwhelms you with, power. He definitely has power, but I think he's just so accurate and just he's made different. He took over 100 shots from Font. Doesn't have a mark on his face. This guy's got fucking rhino skin. Like, what's going on there?
Yeah.
I see this being a very competitive fight. I just see Chito maybe dropping one or two and then taking over later. I think Dom's going to start wearing those leg kicks a little bit, start slowing down just enough for Chito to find his range. I think best thing for Dom is to mix everything up because I think Dom has a beautiful double, beautiful takedowns. He explodes in that really, really well. I just see Chito getting it done in the later half of the round. I don't see a finish happening from either guy. I just see, the clinch work, like Kenny said, those elbows are going to be nasty. Dom has some scar tissue, so Really going to see what the judges say. I think it's going to be a close fight, but I'm going to take Cheeto here. Not overly confident like I was a couple weeks ago. He's not a parlay piece for me. This is going to be a straight wager. Right. But I do like Cheeto winning this fight by decision.
All right. Nicely done, as usual. Hopefully a cut doesn't become a problem. Wise point potentially on the scar tissue on my guy Cruzy. All right. If you want more from Brian Petrie, the MMA Takes podcast is weekly, if not biweekly, and you can find him on social media at Brian Petrie MMA. All right, my man, I'd imagine you're excited to watch this main event. Enjoy it, and we will talk to you in less than a week for UFC 278, kid.
Awesome. All right, boys, have a good one.
There he is, Brian Petrie, with us for the main event challenge. All right, Kenflo's got a pack. Kenflo's got shit to do. He's going to get on out of here. KennyFlorianMartialArts.com. He will be all over the United Kingdom, so hopefully you can check him out. Today's show brought to you in part by UFC Fight Pass, the world's premier combat sports streaming service. With over 200 live events, the largest fight library in existence, original shows, and more, sign up for 1 year and get half off for a limited time at UFCFightPass.com/signup. Speaking of UFC Fight Pass, Anakin Florian Rewind Episode 2 will be up shortly. We look back at Amanda Nunes' big win over Miesha Tate at UFC 200 with our own comedic flair. You know, hopefully you enjoy it, UFCFightPass.com. Everything else right here for you, not behind a paywall, but you can see full episodes over on Fight Pass as well. Thank you to our guests, Brian Petrie, Ray Longo, Aaron Bronstetter, and of course, our producer, Cody Merrill. Kenflo, wheels up. Safe travels, my man. We'll talk to you on the other side, kid, huh?
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it, man.
All right. Appreciate everybody listening and watching and subscribing. And again, eternally grateful. We'll talk to you next week. Until then, see you later.
Hello, I am Dr. George Jesus Mesa, a clinical psychologist and collector of Chicano Latinx art. For generations, we have known of the healing powers of art at an individual and community level. Please join us as we interview prominent artists, collectors, curators, and influencers in the world of Chicano Latinx art. We will explore historical, regional, and political influences that impact Chicano Latinx art today. Along with our partners at www.latinoarte.com, we are preserving the colorful and rich history of Chicano Latinx art for future generations, one interview at a time. Please join us at Healing with Dr. George, the power of Chicano Latinx art, wherever you listen to podcasts.